This episode of the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast is brought to you by Bloaty's Pizza Hog. Bloaty's Pizza Hog! Bloaty's
Pizza Hog! I eat too many pizza!
Eat responsibly.
Nick, 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 Nick.
Nickelodeon!
From Nickelodeon Studios in Burbank, California, this is the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. Hey, I'm your host, Hector Navarro. Welcome to the podcast. We have a really special show for you today. Invader Zim first premiered on Nickelodeon in 2001, and since that very first episode aired, it started amassing a cult following really unique for a cartoon show. Created by Jonan Vasquez and showcasing his distinctive sense of humor and modern art style, Invader Zim caught on for a number of other reasons too, chief among them, the incredible voices of its lead characters. Zim, Gaz, Gurr, well, guess what, guys? The brilliant actors who brought these characters to life are here with us today, Richard Horvitz, Melissa Fawn, and Ricky Simons.
Oh yeah, tacos.
Whenever I see someone less fortunate than I, and let's face it, who isn't less fortunate than I? My tender heart tends to start to bleed. And when someone needs a makeover, I simply have to take over. I know exactly what they need. And even in your case, though it's the toughest case I've yet to face.
You take it, go ahead.
Don't worry.
Yes?
I'm determined to succeed.
Bum, ba, bum.
Follow my lead.
Bum, ba,
and
bum.
Yes, you.
Indeed.
You. Will. Be. Jesus! You started to believe!
Guys, thank you so much for coming in. This is awesome. This is a treat for me. I am a fan. I'm representing all of the fans here on the Nickelodeon Woo-hoo! Animation Podcast. This is so awesome. Did you guys always intend to go into animation? And what kind of stuff did you like growing up as a kid? What was your first memory of animation? What was the first thing that kind of left a lasting impression on you?
Well, for me, there's no doubt it was always Speed Racer and Kimba the White Lion. Speed Racer in particular is still my favorite show. But no, I didn't start out to get into voiceover.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people that you've probably interviewed will tell you that they either started out as on-camera actors, stage actors, or musicians.
Sure. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's the majority of us. I fell into voiceover quite serendipitously. I started musical theater. My very first job when I was 13 was a Equity production of Oliver with Dick Shawn and Stubby Kaye and Shani Wallace of Oliver that was kind of the stage reprisal after the 1968 movie,
cool.
which had done really well. And then, you know, through the 80s, I did a lot of teen films. I did a film called Summer School, and so I always saw myself doing on-camera work.
Sure, yeah.
And I didn't even know anything about animation, to be honest with you. I didn't even know anything about the voiceover profession. It never even dawned on me. I thought Scooby-Doo was Scooby-Doo. It's like, yeah. And I was 18. So, So the way I fell into it was I had a commercial agent named Susan Nathy, who shared an office with an agent named Sandy Schnarr, and someone said, what kept happening on camera was I kept coming down to these jobs and not booking them because they kept saying, he doesn't sound like he looks. And it really kind of started to bother me. So for a while, I started, you know, talking like this, like Billy's dad, and that wasn't me, and I wasn't owning who I was. And so someone said, it was my friend Michael Cutt. He actually said, you ever think about doing animation? I'm like, don't know anything about it. Well, go talk to Sandy.
Yeah.
And I did, and Sandy said, go make a tape. Back then, it was reel-to-reel demos.
Yeah.
And from then on in, you know, it took me about 5 years to break into animation, but once I did, I knew that's where I wanted to be working.
Very cool.
Because I got to work with casts, and I got new scripts every week, and I got to play.
Yeah.
You know, my story is so similar to yours, to Richard's, because I did on camera. I started working in, you know, when I was younger and in my teens, and I was doing theater. I was doing a lot of theater.
Amazing singer, mm-hmm. Melissa is.
I was doing a lot of theater. And my theatrical agent, I was with Tony Kelman Arletta. I was a teenager, and I would go on auditions, and they would always say, her voice does not match what we're calling her in for. Can she work on her voice? Can she get some lower tones? I went and worked with Dr. Lillian Glass, who taught Marley Matlin how to speak and make sounds. And I was like, all right, I'm going to work. And I remember my mom saying, she better be good because she's $100 an hour. Yeah.
Ricky, you were doing comics. You're a colorist. You were a writer. When you were a kid, was it always comics? Was it cartoons? What were some of the things that you loved growing up?
Unreality and animals. So when I was a kid, I thought I was either going to be in cartoons. I told myself, when I was five, I remember telling everybody I was going to be in cartoons when I was 30, which I was.
Did you know?
But
you wanted to actually be in the cartoon.
Right. I think I was saying that I was actually going to be a cartoon character.
He was. Don't break the reality. Right. Ricky is very fragile. He was in cartoons.
But I was obsessed with science fiction and spaceships and robots and animals. When I was a kid, my favorite thing was Space 1999, and then I got into the Muppets. And then for cartoons, I liked Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
And then I got totally obsessed with Japanese animation when I was 15 in the 80s. And I joined a club. It was basically a cult back then. It was a cartoon fantasy organization, CFO. And I would go to these meetings at this guy's house, and it was all dudes.
It was one guy in a van.
Yeah, basically, they were like van-type guys. They had a very van quality to them. Like a girl would come into the meetings, and they would just see them back out, like, and they would go to Japan, and they would get like in the 80s they would go to Japan, and they would get like laser discs of Japanese animation. They would bring it back, and everybody would link their VCRs, and we would just pirate these videos and watch them. We didn't have translations, though. If we were lucky, we had a member who spoke Japanese, and they would make a script, and so we could watch the cartoon and read the script.
Oh my gosh.
We were so obsessed with it.
That's how you had to do it pre-internet.
Yeah, you had to translate.
That's how I met my wife. She was in another club in Los Angeles.
In the van.
I was in Riverside,
driving.
California.
Wow.
And then we met at Disneyland in 1990.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh my God.
What is it about Invader Zim that made it so special?
Well, it was my first voiceover.
Yeah, that's right.
That
you
made
were
it special.
That made
Ricky,
it special.
You were a colorist on the show, correct?
I was a colorist on the show, but I was also doing background acting in movies.
Cool.
All through the 90s, and I was also writing comics. And I was working on Jonan's comic called I Feel Sick. Mm-hmm. And I was living with him for about 20 days, which I don't recommend. It's nice. It's fine.
19
it's fine.
Days is okay.
It's fine.
Ooh,
yeah.
I want to take a sidebar on that, but I want to unpack that. But let's go back to the story. Okay, great.
And he was looking for a voice for Gurr, and he was frustrated because everybody he had auditioned had sort of like, they weren't crappy. They were like good actors.
Yeah. And he was mad at that.
He was mad at that, yeah. But he basically said he wanted me to audition because I couldn't screw it up any more than anyone else. And I said, great! And then, so I went and did it. And then it was magical.
It was magical. Yeah, it was each other that made it
exactly.
So unique. And, you know, all the actors together, along with, of course, the material and Jonan. And it was just great.
No, I mean, we actually formed a dark magic ritual right
yes.
there.
I think, yes. Yeah.
I think, to answer your question, I think that Melissa's right. It's that our chemistry really gels together.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen each other in a year, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like we saw each other yesterday.
You guys didn't just like all of you have dinner last week or
something? Well, Ricky and I see each other, I think, a little bit more.
You guys travel more together. Sometimes the three of us go together.
You sort of text yell at me.
I text yell at Ricky just for fun. But I think that we were young and creative. Mm-hmm. And
when we were young?
No. But I also think that we were... we were entertaining each other. We were laughing. We were doing things we thought that made us laugh, that made us enjoy it. And, you know, and that's happening like right in the room. And then it, you know, goes out into the airwaves and you don't realize how far you're reaching with that humor.
Yeah.
But I've always been a firm believer that if you're having a good time and you're enjoying each other, the people are going to enjoy it. And that's, I think, what made it really successful. That in the and the writing and the vision of the show was just like something that had never been seen.
Yeah,
and it was ahead of its time. It was 26 and a half episodes ahead of its time.
what I liked when I was here, because I was also on the premises all the time coloring the show.
Yeah.
What I liked is that everybody was on the premises. The writers were here. The colors here, background designers, character designers, everybody in the same space interacting.
And is that not common in animation, in case people that are listening aren't aware of how that usually works?
No, because, I don't know about all studios, but I also worked on the Jackie Chan Adventures as a colorist, and they had the colorists in a warehouse way far away from the studios.
That's just in case any ninjas came in and shut right. down on them.
Basically, yeah. We found out that the warehouse was next door to another warehouse where they sent all the letters that they suspected of being having like bomb threats and anthrax and stuff. So that was how much they liked
that's
the animators.
What was the recording sessions like?
Pandemonium.
It was in this room.
It was in this room.
It was in this room
where it happened.
What was funny about it is that, we only had the studio booked for like 4 hours, but we would always go over because
at least
we
20
would be
hours.
Laughing so hard. And, probably like Dora the Explorer was pounding on the door. Come on, get out of there! And it was Dora herself.
Right.
Yeah, she was cussing and swearing
right,
at
us. Like a bathroom.
She was only like five, but wow.
I know.
Right.
Wow. I know.
We just turned this into the bathroom.
Richard was in this and it was sealed shut. We would lock it and he would bounce off the walls.
Yeah. I would bounce. I would drink six bottles of water per record on that show because Zim yelled a little bit.
Oh,
I don't know if you ever noticed.
Yes, I'm aware. Yeah.
And so I would have to drink six bottles of water. And like when they would open the door, it just like a tidal wave would come out. Because I had relieved myself from the six bottles of water.
And you would start to say noises in there beyond what you're supposed to. And then Jonan would just turn off the sound and you'd be going for a while before you realized
we'd
that no
go and have lunch,
you.
Come back. He wouldn't even know.
We'd all have ham sandwiches and you'd be like, why is everybody eating? I'm still doing my thing.
Where's my ham sandwich?
You guys had such iconic voices for these characters, for specifically Zim, but you're incredibly talented actors and pitch perfect for these roles. I have to ask, how much improvisation snuck its way into the show? I mean, the scripts were brilliant. They were hilarious. Everybody, all the writers, Joan and everybody. But how much was it you guys doing these funny noises, doing different things, and then found its way into the show?
I think, we mostly had scripts. I remember there being words on paper.
Most of our improv came at the ADR portion of the episode. We'd be called back, 6 months after we'd recorded the original one.
Mm-hmm.
And we would watch it on screen and then, ADR the picture. And then whenever there wasn't anything there, it started becoming a little bit more free for us to improv. Like, over here became, over here!
Yeah.
Over here! Over here! And then, there was probably one or two, who are you? When people would introduce themselves as Zim, but I would carry it for another 3 minutes. Who are you?
Yeah, and when you do the different takes, you do a different take on it, like three or four takes on every line.
Sure.
And sometimes, Jonan would come in and say, I want it like this, do it like this. But then I would do, the first take would be the way he wanted it. And then I would, like the moment that Gert says, why is his head so big? Why is his head so big?
Why is his head so big?
He was only
big?
Supposed to say it once, but Jonan liked all three takes, so he just used all three.
What was it like to work with a young, brilliant Jonan Vasquez?
Oh, well,
we'd walk into the booth and he'd punch us in the neck.
Really? Did he really do it? Yeah.
He would always do some sort of he'd have these humongous,
boots.
These big combat monster boots. Yeah. And he'd lift his leg and go, yeah! And he'd
he's hot topic.
That was his New Rock phase. He was wearing New Rock boots.
And he always had candy. He loved candy.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Forget.
He had he used to leave candy garbage in my office. he left a half-eaten pixie stick in my office once. It was a huge one, like those big, massive pixie sticks. So we sold that on eBay. $30. He's like Zephod Beeblebrox from A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, crossed with the alien from Aliens.
the xenomorph?
Yeah, little, the xenomorph. Yeah.
Little DeVito?
Yeah, yeah. He's like, DeVito. Yeah, like when you're working, like especially when like, you're working on like a color scene or something with him, you don't know he's there. It's sort of like that scene when the pilot is trying to take off in the dropship and there's she doesn't know the alien's right behind her and you just see the teeth. And it's like that.
When I auditioned and I had a call back and they told my agent, oh, you're going to meet the creator. The creator's going to be there. So I go and it wasn't in a booth. It was in just like a regular commercial casting office and they had set up a mic, kind of like what we're doing right here, but done in a regular room. And on the floor in front of me, sitting like Indian style with his big boots, was like this guy with the black hair and he's kind of like sitting like this and I'm like standing up at a microphone and I was like, who's that? And he's like, oh, I'm Jonah and I'm the creator. And I was like,
the creator.
The creator.
Of everything.
But I'll never forget meeting this guy. Like, oh, he's the creator.
It was funny because I was doing Angry Beavers at the time here and I would see the crew and the whole area of the Invader Zim area was really dark.
Yeah.
Like, the fluorescent lights were covered in black cellophane. Yeah. And it's, like, really dark, and it was very gothy.
Yeah.
It was like, what the heck's going on there? What's going on there? Hey,
method.
Right, and then I would see this guy, exactly as Melissa just described, walking through with his coat stripes. Just flowing in the wind. And his hair just going...
His legs never moved.
Yeah.
Just hover.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. And yet... you know, I have to be honest, Jonah's like one of the nicest guys I've ever worked with. It was, and it was a real joint effort. I mean, he knew what he wanted. He had his vision.
Mm-hmm.
But if you, for example, you were asking about improv, in the pilot episode, the original line was, Invader's blood marches through my veins like giant radioactive rubber ants.
Mm-hmm.
And I accidentally said rubber pants. And that's how it became...
Rubber pants.
Jones said, I like that better. Let's do that. So, I mean, that sort of thing.
No invader has ever been so very small. You're very small, Zim. You're a tiny thing.
But invader's blood marches through my veins like giant radioactive rubber pants. The pants command me. Do not ignore my veins.
As a show of gratitude for your service in the past, here's a sandwich.
But...
Thanks for coming, everybody!
No,
good night!
No! Wait!
What? You got your sandwich!
There were Invader Zim cons, which is...
Invader con, which is
incredible. What has it been like for you guys to see the show afterwards gain this cult following? What was that like?
It's weird.
Great.
It was amazing.
Weird,
great, amazing.
Favorite things that ever happens. Ricky and I were at a convention, and these soldiers came up to our table, and they very respectful, and they would say, hello, sir. And I said, it's not sir, it's Gurr. And they would laugh. But then they would share stories with Ricky and I about how when they were serving in combat, they would watch our show and just laugh hysterically.
Mm.
And then oftentimes they would come back from horrific... fight and they would come back and they would put the show back on and they would start laughing again.
Yeah.
So I was really proud of that. It actually made me cry when the guy told me that. I was really honored and touched.
It's incredible. And also if you then parallel that with the teenagers who were watching, and I'd get girls coming up to me saying, I was so depressed. I was so insecure. I mean, I'm sure you guys hear these stories a lot from boys and girls, but
I hear
you
them from Ricky.
but this show saved me. I mean, I don't mean to say that it's like, oh, the Holy Grail, but it's like something about it, you know, your work on it, it made me feel brave. I could stand up to this or that. And it's amazing that if you could touch them, and like what you were saying before, if what we were doing in here kind of permeates through the airwaves and affects someone, then you've done your job. But it kind of blew my mind when I started hearing girls coming up to me saying, wow, Gaz was like so empowering for me.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
She was for me too. So.
Yeah. We talk about the soldiers. There was the one soldier that said he had a picture of Gurr in his armored vehicle or his tank or something like that.
In his tank.
And that was the first time when I remember someone saying that and thought, people are watching our show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he said that sometimes he would say, twist those knobs, pull those knobs, push that lever, push that lever. I'm like, okay, be careful.
But sir, we're still on our old planet.
Silence.
Twist those knobs. You, pull some levers. Pull some levers.
How many descriptions and ideas were there before you guys came in and even auditioned? Or was it something that was very much like, you know, bring whatever you got?
I got to see a little drawing of Gaz, and she had these slitty eyes. And I know I've told this story before, but for some reason I thought, oh, she's really angry, but she's really calculated.
Mm-hmm.
And she's calculated and not, you know, she has contempt for her brother, but she loves him and she loves her family. She loves her dad. She just wants to have pizza with her dad, you know.
Yeah.
But I came up with this, like, little girl meets Jack Nicholson kind of voice. That came, and, like, she's methodical. She's calculating. She's thinking. She's
Jack
somehow a little girl, Jack. And that's, like, the thing. Like, when I saw her picture, that was, like, the thing that, like, came into me with that.
Originally, when you auditioned, you thought the character's name was Gas. And if you didn't, we thought you thought it was after you left
because
the
room.
Right.
Yeah.
You're like, Jacqueline Nicholson.
Yeah.
Nicholson.
She's Gas.
Oh, Jackie.
Oh, Jackie.
Oh, how about Jackie?
Jackie.
We can make her Jackie Nicholson, yeah. Hey?
Here's Gazzy.
That was the thing that came to me with Gaz when I was first, like, when I saw her picture. And you know, and the thing is that I always played, like, cute little squeaky characters and little girly things. And
why'd you point to me when you said that? I just don't get that.
I just do. It must be your pink socks. Sorry.
Those aren't socks.
Wait, where do you think you're going?
To the mall. Game Slave 2 goes on sale at midnight. I need one.
Oh, okay then, have fun. Just one thing. Take your brother with you. It can be dangerous out there.
That's what the bat's for. Oh, I've been waiting all night to see this. She can wait to get her stupid game.
Son, video games develop hand-eye coordination and make kids into better human beings.
Okay, but only after the show is over. You stink!
How were your lives changed by being a part of Invader Sim?
Well, of course, the friendship that I made with these guys, and now when I see them years later...
Good answer.
You still owe me money,
right?
Melissa.
I
just
do.
So you know.
Sorry, it was for that, like, they paying for my luggage, right? Anyway, I brought, like, three trunks to a convention.
Jack.
Yeah, because of Jimmy Jack. I think, you know what? It was the experience of doing it, and I had done voiceover for many, many years before.
Yeah.
And I'm still doing it now, and I still reflect on this room, these sessions that happened right here, and we got to work with... You know, with Jonan, who is just so innovative and so ahead, and
there was never a bad record session. There was never people not being grumpy or
It was always fun.
It was always fun.
Yeah, it was always fun, and the material was so great. And you know, even I watched a couple episodes last night. I pulled out my house.
Yes,
you know,
Zoom house.
My Zoom house.
I didn't get one.
Oh, that's because I work someone at a convention. I was like, are you giving those away? And they were like, are you Gaz? And I was like, yeah. And they gave it to me.
Wow.
Yeah, it was
Ricky
cool.
tried that.
Ricky tried that.
All he got was the
He
crowds.
Got one. No, he yeah. got one. He
right.
got one.
The house?
The house. You got the house, right?
I got the house because I knew some people at the company that made it.
Oh.
Wow.
And they gave it to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was at a convention, and I think it was just released or something, and I literally was like, I'm the voice of Gaz. They were like, really? And they gave it to
Whoa.
Me. That's it.
I think it was like $300.
Child when I told them that.
You're like, I'm a father of three.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, here, take my child.
That's some of the that's some of the things that we've seen that's perfect at conventions.
Yes.
People come up to us with like full sleeves of Invader Zim, the house drawn with Zim and Gur or Gaz and anything. But one guy came up to us and he said, I want to show you something.
Oh, yeah, that was, I didn't want to see that.
He pulled down his lip.
Yeah.
Oh. And on the inside, he had tattooed Zim.
Yeah. Get out. Yeah. I didn't see that. I don't
yeah.
see
yeah.
that.
No, and then the other thing.
I put his lip back.
Yeah,
I
mean, he put his lip. With a stapler. He put it back with a stapler. No, it was a hammer and nail.
The character, was it the word Zim?
The word Zim.
Oh, that's still painful.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But one of the things that happens often is that someone will do an entire sleeve and then they'll ask us to autograph their arm.
And then they're going to have it done. Yeah.
Yeah,
so Ricky and I had a conversation about it, and Ricky goes, I don't really like that. I don't, and our people doing that said, so now when people ask us, Ricky says,
oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Tom.
I said, well, just don't get serial killed because then they'll think we're signing our work.
Would you guys ever come back to Zim? And did it really ever leave for you guys? Because it sounds like it kind of didn't, is what it sounds like to me.
We keep it alive.
I definitely, there's no doubt about it.
What else would we do?
Without a doubt, because, I said, it's about getting to work and play with these people
with
again.
With this group, yeah.
And I'm itching to get to a Zim something.
Yeah.
And the way it's affected our lives is, you know, like I said, we only did 27 episodes and it's continued, you know, we're going on 12 years since it first premiered.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. 2001.
Yeah, so even more. Oh, so that's, yeah. Okay, so 2001 and now it's 2016. 15. So mm-hmm.
Are we having 16 an anniversary?
Oh, 16 years, 15, actually. We'll be 16 in March.
14 minus 3. Yeah. Add
carry the
two times six. 16,
carry the seven.
It's like 35 years ago.
Don't forget leap years.
Oh, so 36 years ago then, right?
Every kind of amazing. Year. I would do it. Yeah. I mean, I think exactly what Richard said, that it would, if it meant, assembling, I keep wanting to say assembling, if it meant, I can't speak today, but if it brought all of us back together and we got to do this material and work with Jonan and, you know, of course, it's like gold. And
I would like at least 10 more seasons.
At least 10 more.
To really capture.
Yeah.
To really go for what we want to do. What we want to accomplish, it's going to take at least 10 seasons.
To buy a house. Yeah.
Right. To buy a house. To buy a house. So true.
Love that.
I don't
want to
buy a house with you, Ricky.
Yeah. I'm going to live with you, Richard.
Let's just build a compound.
I am moving in.
I have a lovely wife and three kids.
Richard has like the quintessential housey house.
Somewhere that's green, right?
Right?
Are you making it into song?
How about wipe off that makeup?
Oh, right. Oh, see, we need to do a little shop together.
And
Ricky could be the dentist.
Yeah, totally.
I could be Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Actually, that is my, I'm not really, you guys are super into musicals, I think. I'm sensing that. I was never really that into it, but I love, if it's a comedy musical.
I have to say that one of my favorite moments ever in this show was the Christmas episode. And Melissa knows this because it was so ridiculously epic, this song. Bow down before the power of Santa, or be crushed by his jolly boots of doom. So we're doing it. We're singing. We're doing all the singing for it. And it's like, it's my favorite episodes when we get to sing, obviously. But here's Melissa. Doing her own track where everything's like,
what if we took it up like two octaves? Like we did this whole thing.
Amazing.
Like, yeah, let's do it.
All she needed was like a big Viking hat and a shield.
With the whole track.
Go ahead, sing a song.
Breaking the song.
Well, there's I slaughtered a pig.
So this is a good story. You'll like this. So
please.
Whenever Ricky and I travel and Melissa and we travel on conventions, people constantly ask Ricky to sing the Doom song.
Sure. Yeah. Right, which is a 24-hour or a six-month-long song. So, you know, I can't really do the whole thing.
You can't
for
just
them.
Start that.
Right.
So I'll go, hey, does everyone want to hear the Doom song? And they ask me,
you jerk.
Ricky will go,
Well, no, it's the song. They always ask me to do that. Why is your bacon in the soap?
Oh, yeah.
He says, I made it myself. I can't really hit that register in that. Like, I mean, I can.
Sure!
But that
Why
hurts.
Was there bacon in the soap?
You know, that the I made it myself. It hurts now. I don't know what happened. Maybe my puberty has pubed.
Don't eat the cake.
Right.
Don't eat the cake.
But so instead, I just, it's easier to just go, I slaughtered a pig.
And they and all the faces go,
what happened?
Because, you know, there's bacon in the soap. And he says, I made it myself. He's not talking about the soap. He used to hang out with a pig.
Yeah.
So, so Ricky and I got into this thing, that voice rap app that you could do.
Oh, yeah.
And we used to send each other songs back and forth. And it would, you know, it would add music to our lines.
Yeah.
Like, just, you know, lines. So Ricky and I started writing this song at the time. It was like, I slaughtered a pig, which started the whole world slaughtering.
Oh.
Yeah. His
I know there was
verse,
a line with the...
You held his little hoofs in the water.
Oh, no. It's terrible.
I held his head underwater with my tiny robot fists. It's like Gers is some sort of psychomaniac.
How do you get into character specifically for your characters on Invader Zim? What do you do? Do you have a catchphrase? Do you have a sound or something? What do you do to get into that mindset? Or is it just always running around in your head?
For me, it's like any of my characters that I do, I always have some hook that takes me into them. Because oftentimes, I'll play the two characters at once talking to each other.
Right. Oh,
so,
okay.
Like on Invader Zim, it was always exactly that sound that I did earlier. It was like, or this is my favorite hook. Grr! Grr! That's always my hook. With Billy on Billy and Mandy, which I played, it was always the laugh, which was always, I like pie. Yeah. But oftentimes I would have Billy talking to his dad, and so his dad, Harold, was just
who you also
older,
voiced, yeah.
Was an older version of Billy, so that was an easy one because it was always like, Billy, I am your father. Say, Dad, Billy. And so I would do that. For Daggett, it was always, right, Jason? Jason! Spooty Beaver.
I would just think of my three older brothers and how they tortured me my mm-hmm. whole life. I would think of that. But no, I think the line that I would always say was, did you drink my soda? I would always think of that. Did you drink my soda? And I would just say that over and over, and that would get me right to Gaz.
It's great. Right to Gaz. Ricky?
Gurr sort of inhabits the part of my brain that is unflappable.
It's called your uvula. That flaps.
I think it's the medulla uvula.
Medulla.
I don't know anything about puppy anatomy, so I don't know what you're talking about.
You better learn puppy anatomy if you're moving in with us, remember?
If you're going to sleep at the foot of his bed, you better know.
Yeah, you better know puppy anatomy.
If you're going to sleep at the foot of our bed.
I get to get in the bed.
your brain is unflappable. Yes, continue.
Well, because he's outside of everything because he's broken,
mm-hmm.
And I always imagine him as just sort of his mind is just sort of floating above everything, like he's trapped. Like maybe there's a real Sir unit in there that knows what's happening, but it can't do anything about it.
Oh,
and so he's
so
just
sad.
Sort of trapped and watching his body do things that he doesn't want it to do. But at least, you know, you could never like insult Gurr in
right.
any way that is meaningful to him, because he'll forget it 2 seconds later. Or you could never, you know, really truly make him sad or really truly make him even happy. He's just a series of emotions. He's not well.
Yeah, but it's beautiful because I like what you said, that he can never truly be sad, which is a real beautiful thing. And you said he could never truly be happy, but I'm like, but tacos, right? But tacos.
Yeah, but when he likes tacos, it's like, you know, he would like this cup as much as he loves tacos, you know?
It's a pretty good cup.
You know?
My favorite moment, though, people always ask me why my favorite line is, girl, why is there bacon in the soap? Which is one of my favorite episodes, Pastulio, which is, I just love that episode. But he yells to Gurr, why is there bacon in the soap? And without even flapping.
Yeah.
He just fires back, I made it myself. And I thought that's like one of the only times you really see Durr really
yeah.
defend himself with like this really non sequitur excuse.
Defending his actions and defending his point of view. And, with, yeah.
Yeah, there's that's like 77 lines for him through the whole series, I think, something like that.
And they're all on apps now.
Yeah. They're all on it. They're all on illegal apps.
Illegal apps. Download off of mine.
Why was there bacon in the soup?
I made it myself!
Well, guys, this is so unfair, but we're having to wrap out, but we literally just got started.
And you're dragging us out in the cornfield and killing us?
Yes, I am. This was it. This was the way we were going to go out.
We were going to order lunch and just hang out.
Whatever's happening next, let's just not record that cartoon show.
Tell Dora she can't come in.
Yeah.
Tell Dora to wait her time. How old is she now, 30?
Come on, Dora.
I saw Dora out there smoking a cigar.
Dora, come on.
Yeah, Dora, hey! Come on, Boots, it's our turn! Come on!
Swipey, no swipey.
I'm going to swipe a purse when I get in there. The money they pay me, I'll tell ya.
But before we go, I think we're going to ask if you guys, if there's any way that you can sign out in character in your beautiful character voices.
Hello, all you filthy stink beasts. I want to thank you, though Zim thanks no one, for listening to the Nickelodeon podcast with this silly, silly, silly pig smelly.
Well, I think you guys are all kind of stupid in this room, but it was kind of cool being here, and thanks for watching the Nickelodeon podcast. Don't take my soda, or I'm going to come and get you.
Hi. I made a Nickelodeon podcast in my pants.
Perfect. That's perfect.
Gar, that's perfect. What's in your pants? Oh, it's a podcast.
It's a podcast.
My cheeks hurt from smiling and holding back laughter. That was so much fun. Thank you guys so much.
You're,
that was so
you're
great.
You're cool, Hector.
Thank you, Nick.
You guys are cool. Guys, that was our fantastic record with the cast of Invader Zim. Big thanks to them. That was some of the most fun I've ever had in this recording booth. They made my job so easy. It was literally wind them up and go. Big thanks to Ricky Simons, Melissa Fahn, and Richard Horvitz for being here. That was so much fun. Guys, be sure to go to nickanimationpodcast.com for a bunch of cool, awesome extra stuff, all the episodes of the podcast. Thank you for continuing to like and share and subscribe to the podcast. Be sure to do that. If you'd like, go ahead and leave us a review. That really makes us feel good on the inside. Thanks to the awesome crew who puts this podcast together. This podcast is produced by
Jonathan Highlander,
Dana Vasquez Eberhardt, Kelly Smith,
Andrew Hubner.
This week's episode edited by
Josh Caldwell,
Jonathan Highlander.
Original music by Useful Creatures. All of the incredible social media for our podcast is made by
Narbe Manassians,
Sammy Armiger,
David Watson.
And thanks to the man who works the controls and makes me sound better than I have a right to,
Manny Grova.
Until next time, thanks for listening to the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast, and keep watching cartoons. We'll be right back.